Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and you join me again for episode 240. And in news just to hand, I went down to the woods today, and I was prepared for a big surprise because there I saw at the Teddy Bears picnic was Brenton Johnson. Welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back, Robert. Rumors of my death are over-exaggerated. What was that famous Mark Twain quote, Robert?
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. If we only had the internet, we could look it up and find exactly what it is. But I'll leave that to you. So what has Brenton been doing that's kept him away from his number one priority job?
Well, obviously number two priority after doing this Intune rollout. So I've got particularly good at Intune in the last so often since I've done all the training with Steve's YouTube videos, which I was talking about. I'm fairly confident getting in there doing stuff. We've just about got zero touch deployment process written out, and this big onboarding process we're doing at the moment is going really well. We're having to remote like wipe devices, and people are at their homes and they have like 0.8 megabyte down internet connections, and we're having a few challenges, but I'm surprised, because if I had to do it any other way, I think it would be much, much more difficult. So I'm pretty happy with how things are going.
That's good to see. And as we were talking about before we started the record, is that Intune's come a long way and is certainly really becoming a force, I think, and it's constantly improving. I think that's what I see as well. It's constantly adding features. It's still got somewhere to go, 100% admit that, but it's getting regular updates now that it's in Azure as a service, and more people becoming familiar with it. We can get to it with scripting. We can now roll out applications, and we can control our policies with it as well. So it is, I think, a tool, if you haven't looked at it, that you need to have a look at, especially if you using things like group policy to do deployments in the cloud. It's going to be on the Microsoft cloud. It's going to be all about Intune. So I think that is one of the four essential skills that people need moving forward in the Microsoft cloud, is definitely Intune. And it's good to see that there are plenty of training resources out there that you can take advantage of, produced by obviously knowledgeable people like Steve. So that's really, really, really good.
There's also some knowledgeable people like Robert who also produce content.
Yeah, that's me. But again, unfortunately, not everybody consumes that or believes what I say. So we do have to have the occasional third-party collaboration as well. So while Brenton has been away, some things have happened. Probably the major thing that has transpired in the last week has been Microsoft Build. So Microsoft Build is the developer conference. Microsoft One runs once a year. Now, it was going to be a face-to-face event, but thanks to the current pandemic, it was converted to a completely virtual event. And I've got to say, I was pretty impressed with the way it was run. I think some of the content was a bit different and whatever. Did you catch any of it at all, Brenton?
Nope. I was busy onboarding.
Well, you would have learned something if you did. But the idea was, is I think that it's very interesting that Microsoft took the approach of basically running 48 hours straight of content. So you could tune in at any time in the 48 hours and you could see live sessions, new sessions. And they also did a really good job, I think, replaying sessions as well through the time period. So, you know, Satya did his keynote at 1 a.m. On the first day here in Australia. But you could watch that sort of, you know, 1 p.m. in the afternoon on that same day. So they had a good mix of new stuff and obviously the live content. They had plenty of options for people. You could schedule it. They did it all within, you know, basically a browser. You could watch it all there quite easily. And the other interesting thing I found was that the sessions were basically about half an hour. So they sort of cut the sessions back from probably normally 45 minutes to an hour. And I found that worked really, really well. You know, especially being remote, you tend to get distracted with other things. So half an hour worked really well. But they probably weren't as deep as what most developers may like. We'll have to wait and see. But there were some really good presentations. Now, the one I would recommend everybody go and have a look at is the keynote by Scott Hanselman. That was absolutely fantastic. It was a keynote, but it was done in a completely unique way. So if there's one thing that you watch, go and have a look at the presentation that he ran and how the approach that he took around that. Now, probably the big thing that interested me, which is most people coming out of Build, was the announcement of the new Microsoft, or the coming new Microsoft lists to Microsoft 365. So have you had time to read any of the output about lists as yet, Brenton?
No, I certainly have, Robert. This is basically one of the biggest weaknesses of the Microsoft to-do Teams thing. That before Teams, nothing really held everything together. You had to sort of know which app to go to or whatever. Now you just go to Teams, but then we had our tasks distributed across all sorts of different things. You can have tasks in OneNote, you can have tasks in To-Do, you can have tasks in Wunderlist, you have tasks in Planner, you can have a task wherever. Now we're bringing it all into the one thing. And you can display the information in a way that makes sense for you. So you might have a manager who prefers to assign tasks one way, and you might want to consume them a different way. So it's very, very much in line with my thinking of how it should work. And I'm pretty impressed with it, actually.
And again, it's not available as yet. And it is an add-on, as we said, it's another service. So typically we've had lists in SharePoint that most people who work in that environment are familiar with. This adds a bit more the ability to be a bit more dynamic. It also sort of removes lists and gives it the ability to work with other services. It also gives it a nice look and feel. So it gives it that nice makeover as well, which will be attractive to most people. Now, the interesting thing I saw about it, apart from the functionality, was the interface. So it's an example of how simple Microsoft is beginning to make some of these interfaces, which means that now when it is turned on in people's tenants, there's not going to be a lot to configure. It's all about implementing and adopting. So that may be a challenge for people who are used to trying to configure things. But again, it'll be very, very interesting, and we'll see whether it creates more confusion or people jump on it. I've got a feeling that, again, if it is well accepted, which I think it will be, and the way that it integrates with Teams, it's going to solve a lot of those little problems or those little needs that people have basically in their business. So watch out for that coming soon to a tenant near you. I believe it's around June or July. It's coming shortly. So again, we'll put the links in the show notes. You can go and have a look at yourself, but prepare for that. And I myself can find a lot of uses. I do use a lot of lists myself, and again, tie that into things like Flow and some of the other automation tools. I think it's going to be really, really good. So let's see what happens and how people jump on it. But Microsoft certainly made a big noise about it and put that out there for everybody to have a look at. So I think there are some other announcements. Did you also see some of the announcements around Microsoft Teams that they announced?
Oh, yeah. Just before we move on, have you seen Airtable, yep. Robert?
Yeah, it's the same sort of concept. I think, I don't know if they bought it or they copied it. I was reading somewhere, hearing something. So I don't know if it's actually they bought Airtable. I can't remember. But yeah, it's that sort of concept.
Looks very, very similar.
Yeah, I think I've got a feeling. I think I heard somewhere that they bought the company or licensed it or something. I can't remember. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they've actually bought that business. So anyway, we shall see. Anything else that any announcements from Build that you've come across, Brenton, at all?
No, it is more of a developers conference. I'll get young Jackson to have a look through all of that stuff. But yeah, it's very much a shift towards this low code. So for those who don't know, a low code environment is where you don't actually really have to know how to write code. It's sort of halfway between being a coder and being a user, you can write, this is kind of like a pseudo code, isn't it, Robert? How would you explain it?
Well, I think it's basically coding basically by, you know, by flow, like so using like Visio and pulling blocks in and joining the blocks together in a visual manner. So we're talking about things like the Power Platform, which Microsoft is investing great amounts of resources into. So things like Power Apps, Power Automate, Power BI, that's all being integrated into the Teams environment. One of the other things I've been doing lately is also building my own Q&A bot, and that has been able to be surfaced in a web page, also surfaced in Teams. So a lot of this stuff is becoming pretty straightforward and much easier to build and integrate, as Brenton mentioned. And you don't need to have, you know, C++ or Python or those sort of level of low coding of skill level to be able to do this sort of stuff. And it allows you to solve some very, very, you know, painful problems very quickly, I think. And I think that's a big benefit we see out there. And Microsoft really, again, is spending a lot of money and effort to get people into this, as you said, you know, low code environment. So very, very impressive. You done any Power Apps at all?
Yeah, I've found Power Apps to be quite reliable, actually. So what have I got? I have a third party help desk service, and they sent me emails. And the only way to get the tickets out was to go in every month and do a SQL dump and then do all this. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do all this. So all the emails that come in, I just convert into a PDF and then I file away. And then I append information out of the email into the subject line, so I know who it's supposed to be for and all of that sort of thing. So then I can just copy and paste them straight into wherever they need to go or send them off to whoever. So being able to get that sort of a use case is pretty cool. I've got a couple other things going with it. But, yeah, I found it really easy to use, and there's some good tutorials online. And if you get stuck, you can usually get someone around who's fairly good with that sort of stuff. And
yeah, it's got a good community around it as well. It's building a very good community and a lot of helpful people out there. Yeah. As you mentioned. So if you haven't had a play with it, I'd certainly recommend you do. You can really, you know, improve your productivity and reduce, remove some of those remedial tasks and solve those little problems that you may have in your business that you do want to automate. Now, some other news around Teams. We now have the ability to pop out some of our chats and our apps as well. So we've got getting that ability. We're also getting the ability to template Teams now. So what that means is you can start with a standard template, or you can actually template an existing team you have and use that as a basis for future teams. So that'd be good for doing project management and doing maybe repetitive events and things. So that is also now available. We're talking about, we mentioned that lists will also be integrated into Teams as well. One of the big things I like is this contextual search. So now what we can do is we'll be able to go into a channel and do a control F, and we'll be able to search from that channel. So rather than searching the whole team and potentially getting lots and lots of results, we can go to a channel basically now and do a search there as well. We've got some improvements around conditional access as well to improve the security. Lots and lots of stuff. We'll make sure we put the notes in the update that we put out with the podcast here. Also, an interesting one here that I was looking at is one of the things Microsoft seems to be very keen on is this, you know, telemedicine or remote support sort of thing. And now another really good one is the ability to embed bookings directly into Teams. So you can use bookings to show basically everybody's calendar, and then you can create meetings directly from bookings that will invite everybody and take care of that. So, again, if you haven't seen that, that's another really handy one I find inside an organization. When it comes to trying to schedule a meeting across multiple people. So have a look at that. And probably the big thing is we've now got the Brady Bunch ability. We can now see 3x3. Has that changed your life, Brenton?
Yeah. So we won't mention the catastrophically successful video conferencing platform that's almost become as synonymous as searching as with Google is.
Yeah, I mean Skype.
No, almost. So when I'm hosting a meeting on Teams, one of the challenges was, if you're the chair of the meeting and you're trying to figure out what the mood of the meeting is and all that, it was very, very difficult to run it as the chair because you only have four people and blah, blah, blah. Now with Brady Bunch, it should make running a committee meeting a lot easier. And when I spoke to my customers about using Teams, they were like, yeah, it's great for small meetings, but we can't use it for big ones. And I believe it was a deliberate design choice to try and get people to focus rather than be distracted with all these faces on the screen.
Well, most of the time, really, only one person at a time is talking and everybody else is twiddling their thumbs or doing something else. So it has questionable productivity, Bennett. So I understand why people like it, but I think that sort of novelty, I think, is worn off very quickly. But yes, look, you know, 9x9, the rumor is Microsoft will continue to increase that or at least give you the option. It does require bandwidth and resources to manage that on across, you know, what are they up to now? 77 or more million active users of Teams per day. And that's basically doubled in 2 months. So, and there's also a number of other features that they're adding to control meetings, like you can raise your hand now. You'll get a summary of the settings before you go into a meeting that you can control. So to Microsoft's credit, again, it is bringing a lot of these features in very quickly, and we should see those roll out in the very near future. So we'll make sure that we put the links to all that in the show notes so you can go in and review those as well. Now, some other ones that have happened. Also, there's a new public preview of Yammer. So Yammer basically was looking a bit 1980s, I think, or year 2000-ish. They've updated the interface for that. Now, interestingly, Yammer obviously started out as a independent company. It was bought by Microsoft to try and do social. It lacked that integration and consistency across the Microsoft stack. So with this new interface, it, again, looks more like Teams, looks more like the modern SharePoint, but it's also losing some of its capabilities around external guests, which Yammer was sort of designed to do. So, again, you can go in and turn the preview on if you're looking at Yammer, but just be careful around some of the external users if you are using those as well. I've turned it on my tenants. I think it works really good, looks really good, but you do lose some of that external user connectivity, which, again, may affect some people, but hopefully not too many. And don't forget that this year's the year of Yammer, so we will see what happens when it fully rolls out to everybody. Now, I think it has a place, but we'll have to wait and see how people integrate that with Teams. Anything else that sort of caught your eye out there, Brenton?
Not really. I was thinking about your bookings thing earlier. I've been using their Cortana bookings app thing. I've used the booking. All of these things are actually really handy, particularly if they're going around setting up Teams meetings. One of the big things I've been running into with a thou shall not be named video conferencing solution is people don't know what the password is and they're ringing the host like, oh, what's the password? It's like, it's in there. Oh, I've only got a United States phone number to call, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I'm really excited about how well they've been able to sort of streamline that Teams calling solution. It's just becoming very, very competitive, I would say, Robert.
Well, I think we've also got to look at Teams as more than just a video conferencing tool. It's obviously becoming the faceplate on top of all these other services that people use as their central hub and will connect to other services like SharePoint, Lists, Tasks, and so on. So it is slightly a different tool for a different job. It does incorporate something that is similar to other products, but I think that if you are in the Microsoft space and you do have the Office 365, Microsoft 365 subscription, it's a matter of, again, maybe looking at some of these new features that are becoming available very quickly and using those to their fullest extent. So very happy with it. We use it all the time. I did a presentation for a distributor on the Microsoft space, and we had almost, I think, close to 100 people on that meeting, and that worked quite well. There is a bit of discipline you need to maintain and make sure people raise their hand rather than talking over the top and muting, but you can control the fact that people who join the meeting go through a lobby and then they become attendees rather than presenters. So used correctly, I think it is a very, very effective tool, but there is a little bit of knowledge to invest in to make sure that you get the most out of it, as with basically any other tool. So for me, like I said, I've been spending a lot of time working and getting some of my scripts up to date. Also been playing around with a bot. Hopefully I'll do some write-up on that. But that's another really cool thing I see, is the ability to integrate, you know, basic Q&A for people as well. So the takeaway for me from Build is just all of this stuff is beginning to come together. You're really getting a good platform, be it a Power platform, an AI platform, an Azure AD platform, to start building this stuff out, a security platform as well. So it's really, you know, really exciting to see what's coming and what Microsoft's got available for us shortly, and it will continue to grow, which I think that is probably the biggest opportunity for, you know, people out there selling the product and supporting it. So we'll be able to bring you more of those details. All right, Brenton, if you don't have anything else, how can people get in contact with us if they wish to? Now that you've returned, I'm sure that your fan base wants to send you congratulations and a hearty well done on your return episode.
Yep. So you can send all the fan mail to Director CIA on Twitter. That would be great. Robert will no doubt send that stuff through to me. So make sure you send as much as you humanly can. Yep. I'm contact Brenton on Twitter. You can leave feedback@needtoknow.cloud. And I think that's everything, isn't it?
That will do for the time being. You need to probably refresh your skills before we let you loose on the next episode of the Need to Know podcast. Welcome along to our interview for this podcast. I'm pleased to welcome back a regular Mark O'Shea. Welcome back, Mark.
Thanks, Rob. Great to be back in these trying times.
Challenging and remote times. You and I, as we discussed before we started, a bit of an expert at this. Not everybody's up to speed with the remote working. But before we do launch into our topics today, why don't you give people a little bit of a brief overview as to who Mark is?
Okay, so Mark O'Shea, I'm a Microsoft MVP for Windows and devices for IT. So effectively, like, focus areas would be around, you know, modern device management. So regardless of whether we're talking, you know, Windows or other mobile platforms. But then there's also, I guess, you know, prior to becoming an MVP, I had 20 years at Microsoft. So a lot of exposure to Microsoft technologies over those years. And I won't say how many years back into that 20 years you and I first worked together, but I think we could probably figure that out without too much trouble at all based on where you were located at the time, because I'm pretty sure I remember.
Yeah, I think that we've got plenty of time to work that out. We've now got the tools and capabilities, I'm sure. So
yes.
But we do need to probably focus on the important things like organizing toilet paper at the moment. That's not quite as the topic of this discussion. So I brought Mark on and we're going to have a bit of chat around some of the changes to the Microsoft 365 environment. There have been some, I think, very important changes that people need to be aware of, because otherwise it will create a lot of confusion going forward. And I would suggest that one of the points has been the recent rebranding or renaming of the Business Office 365 SKUs into a Microsoft 365 environment, which initially will cause probably a lot of consternation, but in the long run, I think is a very good idea. So why don't we start with that, Mark? What's your sort of, before we talk about in depth, do you want to give people a bit of a summary as to what's transpired there with the branding?
Yeah. So what's basically happened on with the business line of the Office 365 products is they've been rebranded as Microsoft, as part of the overall Microsoft 365 business family. So things like Office 365 Business Essentials now becomes Microsoft 365 Basic. So there's like some short-term risk of confusion, because change always generates some confusion. But I think, like, when I sort of think about, you know, people that I'm talking to who just don't really know the differences between Office 365 and M365, I actually view this as a bit of a step in the right direction, because now rather than it being these two different families where one of them really was just a superset of the other, even though it reached into different product sets, I think now you can look at it as more of an end-to-end family for SMB, as opposed to going, well, if you do want device management, this is the option, and if you don't want device management, here are the three options. I think now it's just a bit more of a continuum, even though we probably won't really, you know, even for me, like, I sort of look at it and go, well, I'm still going to try to have you know, what's currently the Microsoft 365 business conversation, which will turn into the Microsoft 365 business premium conversation. So I guess the positive that I look at is that they're not reusing the M365 business name moving forward. That's just more of a, I guess we could sort of view that as a brand as opposed to a product after this. So that's one thing that does make me happy with this.
Well, I think I like the fact that they've now got, you know, they've got basic, standard and premium. They've aligned them, you know, with the value in the SKU. I think that, again, a lot of the, I suppose, criticism or hesitancy is that, yes, Office 365 and Microsoft 365 are typically have been different things. As you mentioned, the Microsoft 365 business has included effectively the EMS suite in there as well with Intune and whatnot. But I think that one of the big criticisms has been is, well, we're confused between Office 365 and Microsoft 365. So I think that basically removing the Office 365 naming out of the business SKUs, which I think we'll eventually see in enterprises as well, but out of the business and then aligning them to a standard, which is just the cloud-only services, a basic, which is the cloud-only services, then a standard, which is the desktop apps as well, and then the premium, which is all the add-on security features as well, makes a lot of sense. I think it's going to be easier to sell. Yes, a little bit of confusion initially, but I think in the long run, it does make a lot more sense.
Yeah. And even if you think about the people who just haven't had any exposure to this yet, and I think we both deal with them on a pretty regular basis, I think the new conversations we'll be able to have around this do actually make life a lot easier, as opposed to throwing in different brands and that causing confusion. I think this moving forward, I actually really like these changes.
So I think that, as always, there will be a transition into this and people will have to, you know, slightly relearn it. But again, the important thing I think to emphasize is it's just a name change. There's no actual features being changed in, you know, Office 365, Business Essentials, Business, Premium, and now Microsoft, you know, the old Microsoft 365 Business. I think it's putting it under one banner makes a lot of sense. Now, would you expect that down the track we're probably going to see, you know, more of the security features maybe, you know, trickle down to the older, the standard and the business SKUs now, and maybe more features added into the Microsoft Business Premium?
I don't know. It seems in this space is a bit different to, like, if you take a look at what they do in the enterprise side, there tends to be anything that's really focused on security or compliance tends to end up in the, like, E5 or the add-on to E3 space. So, but that doesn't necessarily translate down to the business side or to the SMB side. So I think we've just got to sit back and see what happens. But my gut feeling here is we'll just keep seeing more and more value added to what becomes Microsoft 365 Business Premium to give it even if it's not necessarily technical capabilities, even if you think about licensing enhancements. So things like the change from a subset of AAD Premium to full AAD Premium. I think we'll just see more things like that. We'll see additional licensing. I don't want to say the removal of, I don't know whether to say the removal of restrictions or the addition of licensing benefits, for example, that you may have had to go up to E3 versions of. I think that's probably what we're more likely to see in, like, on the premium SKU. I just don't really see too much of that rolling downhill though from there.
Okay, that's interesting.
But
all right,
purely pure speculation, of course.
Pure speculation. Yeah. And another point of speculation too is, do you see the same thing happening maybe for the enterprise plans? Do you see it generally as a Microsoft move to put everything under one banner, just to, because that has been a complaint for a long time, why have we got these two different SKUs? Do you see it Microsoft trying to align it to a single brand being Microsoft 365?
I think if they could do it without it causing too much confusion, because there you're starting to, I guess, squeeze more things into that one family. Whereas here, because we only had the one version of Microsoft 365 Business to start off with, like, we're not at that same position where we've got, you know, the Office, you know, the E1s, the F1s, the E3s, the E5s. I think it's probably a more complicated ask over on the enterprise side. So this is probably a good starting point for them to figure out what worked, what didn't work. It really, to me, it doesn't make sense to only do it on one side.
Yeah, I think that, again, we don't know how long, and again, it is pure, you know, speculation and all that sort of stuff, but I can sort of see them moving this way, again, to simplify it and to move, because the big thing now, I think, is that to an extent, the migration to the cloud is we're in the tail of that, I would suggest, for a lot of people. So now the next move is, okay, we're going to add more security around that, and I think that's where the add-in's going to come. So yes, most people have Office 365. Now what's the next step up for them is to now start using some of the enhanced security features that previously were outside that environment.
Yeah.
So since we're now talking about some of the added benefits to Microsoft 365 Business Premium, the full version of Azure AD P1 has now come to Microsoft 365 Business Premium, which I think is a huge add-on, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and the thing that I kind of find funny about this one is probably the thing that I like the most about this is that we can just say that it's AAD Premium P1. We don't have to explain what it is and what it isn't, because that just caused so much confusion. So I think now this is another thing that is just going to clarify it. But when you take a look at some of the additional things that you start getting, well, like, even if we take a look at the blog post that that team came out with, if I take a look through that list, none of it is stuff that I guess was really what I was seeing people push really heavily for. I think because we'd already sort of gotten through the conditional access side, we got through the support for hybrid and password write back. So I think because we got a lot of those top features knocked off over the last few years, thanks to that, the M365 business team pushing for them, I think what we're now seeing is, like, I don't want to call them edge case scenarios, because I know that some of these are things that we could turn into things that people do leverage. And even like going through that list, what have we got? We've got Cloud App Discovery, which requires, you know, someone to be feeding information into the underlying engine of MCAS. So they're going to have the on-prem infrastructure to be able to do that, which I don't know what percentage of people running M365B are really going to have that one. Now, it's nice for those who do have it, but it's, you know, it's one of those ones that I'm looking at going, I can see some use cases for it, but it's not a big one. The app proxy, I can see a lot of good use cases for that, for people that aren't quite ready to move everything on-prem to the cloud. So if they've got their line of business web apps, et cetera, that they still want to keep on-prem until they fully realize the value of their existing hardware before moving something to the cloud, then I could see app proxy and the integration into the additional Azure AD sign-in and MFA type capabilities. And I see that one as a big one. Dynamic Groups was the other one that they called out. Now, this one is a bit of a weird one, because Dynamic Groups hasn't officially been in there, but it's unofficially been exposed for maybe 6 months, maybe longer. And I realized it by accident, and I reached out to that team and said, hey, is this supposed to be there? And they were like, oh, we're asking for it. So that one's kind of there, but I do like Dynamic Groups. So that's one that I like to rely on, especially if I'm doing queries, like let's say with Intune, if I want to do some kind of, you know, policy to a specific version of Windows 10, using Dynamic Groups and doing some targeting based on OS version number, for example, Dynamic Groups makes that pretty easy. And it just means I don't get logs filled with errors about policies not applying because it's trying to apply to the wrong version of an OS. And then the final one they mentioned, the passwordless auth, which is pretty handy. So getting people used to the idea of not just pushing accept, but getting prompted which of the following three is the correct number you should push. So all up, I think there definitely are benefits there. If we take a look at the four of them, I think for most SMBs, it's probably going to be Dynamic Groups and the passwordless that are the important ones.
Yeah, okay. So the question I would have is, okay, yeah, Azure AD, great add-on. Now, like you said, removes confusion. Yes, it includes everything. There's not if, but, maybe, possibly. So that, again, makes it much easier to sell, much easier to look at the features and compare it. Of all those, I've always recommended the addition of Office 365 or Microsoft 365 Cloud App Security. With Azure AD P1, we get a Cloud App Discovery, which is, again, let's call it the basic version. Do you feel that cloud app discovery is good enough, or would you say that you'd be better off looking at the add-on for, you know, Office 365, Microsoft 365 cloud app security? You know, does cloud app discovery do enough?
Well, I think the name kind of tells you what it does. It, you know, it helps to discover what you've got based on what log information you can shoot through to them. But it doesn't really do anything around you then taking it further and being able to control those. So you can't sort of do a simple, you know, blacklist of here are sites that I don't want people accessing from work devices, for example. So if someone's already using MCAS, or someone's already been looking at MCAS, or, and actually I don't think you can buy OCAS standalone anymore, can you? I think you can only get that as part of your O365 E5s.
I think you can buy the Office 365 and Microsoft 365 as standalone packages.
Oh, too. Okay. For some reason, I thought that they got rid of the OCAS site as a standalone. But yeah, I'd rather push you down the path of MCAS, especially if it's also an organization that's looking at, you know, and this is another one of the things that's changed recently, now that you can also get the standalone versions of Defender ATP for licensing purposes. So just the integration you get between Defender ATP as well, you know, into your MCAS environment, that would steer me down that path. If people are saying, you know, what would be the two security add-ons I'd recommend for most people, that combination is a really, really good, for me, that's a really good combination to make sure that, you know, we're seeing what's going on the devices at the device level and at the user level, and then being able to correlate that through to, you know, what else is happening in Azure AD for those users.
So, yeah, I agree. I think Azure AD P1 add-on, yep, some missing pieces, great. Cloud App Discovery is a great place to start to get a feel of what this Microsoft, let's call it a SIEM tool, just for easier categorization, to allow you to start looking at the activities. But I would really suggest that, yeah, Office 365 Cloud App Security, or even better, Microsoft Cloud App Security, are probably a value add-on for your tenant on top of Azure AD P1. Now, the other one that you mentioned there, which I think will stir a lot of interest, is the fact that Defender ATP is now available in a standalone SKU. So prior to this, it was available in E5 of Microsoft 365 and E5 EMS. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then basically that now means we can take out this AV, this threat.
Oh, sorry. Win10 E5.
Win10, sorry.
Yeah, only Win10 E5, sorry.
Win10, it's bigger part. Win10, yeah. That was what I was thinking, but yeah. Win10 yeah. E5. Yeah. But now it's a standalone SKU. Now, obviously, that means it can be added onto any package. You're going to get that ability. You're going to get that threat protection, let's call it, this back end link to the front end of Microsoft Defender on the Windows 10 machines. Now, I see this is another big move by Microsoft to, again, allow people to attach this AV product to any of their environments. I think this, again, is another very important move. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because, like, especially if we take a look at it from M365 licensing and pricing, or from the business family, like, we would have had to buy that Win10 E5, regardless of what Windows 10 enterprise features we needed, just to get the Defender ATP license. So now we can get that Defender ATP license effectively at the price difference between Win10 E3 and Win10 E5. And the reality is we know a lot of people aren't even enabling all the security capabilities that Windows 10 Pro has got, yet alone what Win10 Enterprise is going to give them. So I think this is something that really starts opening it up. It lowers that price point quite dramatically. And if people are sort of moving into that, we want everything to be tightly integrated. We want signals from one thing showing up in another. We want to be able to, you know, create conditional access policies that are looking at compliance setting or compliance from Intune, and Intune is picking up some of that information from Defender. Then that's basically what we can start getting now with some of these licensing combinations that just would have been, you know, somewhat out of reach previously.
Well, I think it's interesting because obviously Microsoft's giving us typically Defender, the endpoint AV, for every Windows 10 machine. But what has been lacking has been that central console to bring it all together, to give us overview management, policy, threat analytics, and so on. And adding that as a value add that you can add to any SKU again, is a very interesting concept. And it sort of indicates to me that Microsoft is recognizing that more and more people are evaluating their security stature and also want this integration. Because I think where the Microsoft product, I still think it's better, one-on-one, but the real winner here, which takes it to the next level for me, is just this integration with Defender, MCAS, alerts and all these other things that are happening. I think that's the real winner here, because the only way you can treat security successfully these days, I think, is basically to be able to look at the overall environment and allow the cloud and AI to tell you what you need to look at. Otherwise, you're going to be overwhelmed, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think, if we try to take the logic of like someone who's used to going through on-prem AD logs to figure out what's been going on, like that's something that doesn't really scale for you to be able to sort of eyeball something and take it out to the event logs that are in the cloud. Like, and I'm sure at some point you've probably taken a look at some of the stuff that gets thrown into log analytics before Sentinel or something like that picks it up. And just that constant stream of data is something that, even in a smaller environment, there's going to be a hell of a lot more coming into that than you would have ever seen in your on-prem environment. So I think just having something else making some of those basic yes, no, is this good, is it bad type decisions. And then like there might be edge cases where we get false positives or false negatives. But that's something where we just, we just see some of that stuff get better over time.
So again, for the people that are used to traditional AV and traditional AV systems from third parties, apart from integration, what would you say is one of the standout features of Microsoft Defender ATP? Where does it, move above, what's out there typically with third party? What would you say is the sort of the killer feature for it?
So probably the big thing there is just the sheer volume of data that comes into Microsoft. Like if you take a look at, the number of devices they're reporting in, all of the different data points that they're collecting that aren't just related to, what typical AV vendors would be relying on. And I think it's taken, it's taken a few years for them to get this right. And we saw some of those changes kick in a few years ago where they went from, being, as far as the different, anti-malware testing solutions out there went, they kind of went from mediocre to being top tier within a pretty short time period once they started focusing on it. So I think it's just that sheer scale of what they're seeing that allows them to basically make a lot of these decisions. And the other thing as well that I think we just can't discount is that, if we're primarily looking at using it for providing defense on Windows devices, is we kind of have to assume that the people who build Windows are the best at defending Windows.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that's the integration. I think that once you start using Defender, it does get a bit overwhelming because it's sort of a different approach to the traditional AV console. It's about threats. It's about privilege escalation. It's about a whole range of additional options. But I will admit, after spending a fair amount of time now looking at it in detail, one of the things that really excites me, I think that's a relatively new feature, is this live response session. So basically, once your machines have the agent on there, you can basically run a live response session, which basically gives you a remote console into the machine at a command prompt level that you can go in and run PowerShell and scripts and grab files and look at all sorts of things. So again, that ability to have this remote access built into it on top of, some of all of the other fantastic things. And the other thing I really like also is the automated investigation, because many times do you get, something happens in the middle of the night with some workstation or something and, you're not there to look at it. And or having an automated investigation process is just magic. It just, and you can say, look, if you can't solve it, then isolate the machine and pull it off the network. So again, if you haven't looked at this, I really commend you to go and have a look at what it can do, because I really think that this is sort of the only way we're going to be able to manage security sort of going forward, even in the SMB environment, because again, it's such a threat. And, in today's environment, I think you'd agree, Mark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think and when you take a look at some of the things they're doing around, Mac clients, Linux clients, looking at mobile clients, they're making sure that they're, that it's not one of those things that you can dismiss because it doesn't cover all the platforms that you need. And that, you know, and that's something that kind of has kept it in the outer in some organizations, but that's something where they've, you know, they've definitely closed those, you know, some of those cross-platform gaps, or at least for the majority of the platforms that people were looking at. So yeah, it's getting harder to use some of the arguments that people may have used, you know, even as recently as, you know, a year or 2 years ago, just because of just the rate at which they're rolling functionality in.
Well, also, don't forget, I also read or saw that they're going to bring clients for iOS and Android as well.
Yeah, so once that happens, it's, you know, you're at the point where, okay, it's just going to be edge case scenarios of, well, we run this particular version of an OS that's not widely used. That's the kind of thing where there might be some third parties that will still have that integration. And that's, I guess that's one of the other nice things that you start seeing now is when you do look at the third parties that integrate with Defender ATP, they're not just the smaller boutique AV vendors these days. You'll see some big names in there.
Yeah, and again, I think that there is, you know, this is such a great tool. And now that they've detached it from their premium SKUs and offering it to people as a standalone, I see it's going to be a big uptake, I reckon. I think it's really going to allow people to evaluate and really see some of the real intelligence, the real benefit, the real power that Microsoft's built into this solution. Because when, the more you look at it, the more impressive it is. And again, the big advantage is it links into Intune, it links into MCAS, it links into, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on. And its ability to tell you the threats on machines and whatever, I think it's just an amazing tool. So again, highly recommend, if you haven't seen it, go and add it to one of your licenses, one of your tenants, have a play with it and understand it. Now, I think the other thing that I'm very, very positive about is Azure Sentinel. Now, this is an Azure service which allows us to take feeds, but do you want to give us an idea of, you know, in your words, what Azure Sentinel is?
Okay, so it's, yeah, basically it's like a SIEM solution, so we can ingest logs from a variety of different, like, on-prem and cloud-based services. But if we sort of just narrow the focus to M365, a lot of the M365 related services, you can ingest that data into Sentinel at basically no cost. And it ends up being, you know, just a data retention story. If you want to keep data for longer, that's where you really start to keep, you know, incur some costs. But for most SMBs, you know, we're probably talking dollars per month, not even tens or hundreds of dollars per month, which for a SIEM solution is pretty cost effective. And one of the things that I do like about the change with the M365V licensing to moving across to AAD Premium is, up until recently, you could still integrate AAD Free / AAD Basic / O365 AAD into Sentinel, even though it wasn't officially supported, but you could only pull in activity logs and not sign-in logs. And the challenge there is that it's the sign-in logs where most of the activity is taking place. So for me, with M365B, all of a sudden Sentinel now starts looking like another thing we could sort of add pretty easily. Now, other things that we could add, like we could have added in like the Azure Information Protection piece, just the connector for that is in there. But I think now that you can pull your sign-in logs for orgs that are looking at ways of, you know, trying to slice and dice information in different ways, be able to do, you know, additional investigations, it's just another tool that's at your disposal that's not going to cost you a fortune.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think that my experience has been, so I've used it, hooked it up. So the first thing we're going to need, if you want to explore it, is you're going to need an Azure subscription, because correct, there are going to be some costs. So you will need an Azure subscription added to your tenant, which won't cost you anything and then will be based on the consumption. The second step then is to go in and configure Sentinel, which will give you log analytics, make you create a log analytics workspace. So just think of this as a huge data lake into which all the data then goes into, like a big database. And then we set up these connectors, which Mark talked about. So we can connect up as a basic Office 365, Exchange, Azure AD logs, and a range of them. And they are basically going to be free for data ingestion because they are already in the Microsoft cloud. So would you suggest they're the best ones to start with, Mark? Just take the Microsoft.
Just take the ones that aren't going to have a lot of a lot of longer term costs associated, or even short term costs associated with them, just so that you can start getting an idea of how much data is coming in. Like, you want to make sure that you're not exceeding the free ingestion amount per month or anything like that. So starting off small and just grabbing the ones that you know aren't going to incur additional costs, and then over time start deciding, well, what else do you want to start bringing in? So if you're still running, a bunch of VMs, start bringing in firewall logs, for example. There's, start bringing in other stuff from the Microsoft Management Agent. So there's no shortage of stuff we can start bringing in, integrating with Security Center, and just sort of trying to get it. Yeah, if we can sort of get all of that information into one location rather than relying on separate tools, it might just give us a little bit of extra insight into what's really going on inside and outside of the organization.
Well, I think that the other thing to appreciate is it's not only Microsoft Cloud Service. You can bring in AWS, you can bring your firewalls, you can bring a whole huge amount of stuff. And see, what you can also start doing is bringing in information and logs from your workstations, which is exactly what I've done. So my experience has been that if you use the Microsoft Cloud apps yourself, these are free for ingestion costs. Therefore, the only cost you pay is an analysis cost, which is the Azure Sentinel cost, and that's basically per gigabyte. And I think it's around about $5 for 5 gigs, I think, of data analysis, in Australian dollars anyway. And then what I've done is I have all my workstations basically with an agent on them that is pumping that up into the Log Analytics workspace. Azure Sentinel is analyzing that. And that's costing me basically about $5, $5 or $6 per machine per month to have all that, to have Sentinel as well. So again, it's still relatively cheap for what it does. And what I really like about it is the fact you can go to a single dashboard and it'll show you your incidents and your logs and say, look, you need to look at these three things. So we've seen these three things, and then you drill into it from there. I think that's the winner for most people, is that single dashboard. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh yeah, and then other people building workbooks, putting them up in GitHub, etc. So the community effort behind it as well. Like, so obviously there's the starting templates that Microsoft provides, but then there's also a bunch of community support behind it as well, which means that we don't have to do a lot of the work to keep enhancing it. We can just keep checking back in to see what's changed.
And the other thing I like about it too is, again, if you just want that simplistic, what's happening, show me, the red, green, red, orange, yellow, green sort of thing, what I need to pay attention, you've got that. But then because there's this huge amount of data that's being sucked in there, you can then go and do queries on it. So using the Kusto query language, a bit like SQL, you can then go in. And when you go in and have a look at, as Microsoft calls it, the advanced hunting, it's like, oh man, that's impressive. I mean, you see all the stuff that's in there. It's like any scenario. And then you can create your own as well. So I think this is the winner here. I think a lot of third-party security solutions were very much locked away, and you had to take their dashboards or you had to take their consoles. And there's always that one bit of data that you couldn't get to. But I think the approach Microsoft has taken is very smart. They just add a dashboard over the top of the data. You can still get to the data, run your own queries, build your own dashboards and your workbooks, and people in the community can contribute. But that's, I think, going to be a real success going forward.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And just the number of people I know who started off casually using it just to see what it offered and have now basically turned it into something that's in use full time in production. And just because the costs were so low, it wasn't something where they had to have conversations that would have never gotten very far in the old SIEM provider days.
Yeah. The interesting thing is I think, suppose the thing that stuns most people when you tell them, it's like, if you only have cloud and Microsoft Cloud Ingestion Server, there's a huge range of them. It's only going to cost you about $5 a month. I mean, that's a no-brainer to me to analyze all those signals and then say, right, go in and pay attention to this incident. Because I think one of the changes in security is a lot of the third-party packages looked at individual work, what's happening on this workstation, what's happening on those, all treated them independently. I think that security today is about, well, someone got access on this machine, then they basically jumped to another machine, then they ran this, then they jumped to another machine, and you've got to look at it in totality rather than just isolation. And I think, again, Microsoft tools do this really, really well because of that integration. And I think it's a winner. I really do.
Yeah, even if you sort of jump up from M365B up to someone who's got M365, E5 or E3 plus a few other things, the number of things that you can just turn on and integrate really easily, like I think it's like something like 10 or 11 connectors into the different security and compliance elements that you can just jump in and turn on without really too much effort. There might be a couple of extra steps in a few of them, but all up, it's just so easy to start pulling together all of those different sources and then pull in the other sources that are outside of that environment as well.
Yeah, and I think that part of this also is which you would agree. I think you need to look at this, the solution, the Microsoft Cloud solution in totality. It's not just Office 365. It's not just Microsoft or EMS. It's not just Azure. You've got to look at all of these together and look at the integration that provides. And when you analyze what it does bang for buck, I think, again, it really is vastly superior to anything else there on the market that you've sort of got to cobble together from the bits. And I think the winner is that I think you probably agree that Microsoft is really kicking some goals and advancing the product in leaps and bounds, aren't they, since they've started this progression to pull all this stuff together.
Yeah, all you have to do is take a look at what's happening over on Microsoft Tech Community in their security areas. And there's it's not quite a weekly here's what's new in Sentinel webinar that you can jump in or watch afterwards, but they're pretty regular in terms of, the additional capabilities that are being added in and how to leverage them.
All right, so we're coming to the end of our time. Is there anything else that's jumped out at you that you've seen out there that you'd, again, like to let people know about at all?
Probably just everyone keeping safe is the important thing right now.
Well, I think also, too, part of it is this change in, which we sort of talked about briefly before we recorded, was this change in aspect, as in, people working remotely and again, adopting the tools and working in the cloud, and how this is sort of going to change the concept of how we work going forward and the requirements. So do you just want to give us your sort of take on, how you, when all this calms down, hopefully in the short term, and we get back to some sort of normal, what do you think that normal is going to be? How's it going to be different from what we were used to previously?
I think if your role is a role that has actually proven successful with, working from home, I think it's something where a lot of employers who were previously not really that big on, flexible workspaces or, flexible work hours, I think there's going to be a lot more of that starting to come through, because if an organization has survived and they've seen productivity, potentially even productivity gains in some areas, there's no way that they can say that it doesn't work and that they can't trust their employees.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's going to be a cultural change. People are going to work from home, and how are we going to do this? And it's not as difficult as I thought. And once I've conquered the tools, it's amazing what you can achieve, and I can still see people. But I also think there's a technology change too. So again, it indicates our dependency more on the internet. But also I think that this is a different paradigm, because let's take security as a good example, is no longer are my users behind a firewall, behind a lockdown network, an environment where we've got the IT person at a beck and call. Now you've got people spread to the four winds of the world. So again, it's very interesting, and we won't know until it obviously pops out the other side. But I think there are big changes, again, for users, but also for people that manage IT as well. I think you'd agree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can definitely see some of the technologies that you knew that would be part of people's futures, but they might have been somewhat dismissive of them. You can start seeing that some of that stuff, like let's use autopilot as an example. You can now start seeing that, if people can't come into the office to pick up their new laptop, which IT has spent hours building and getting, I don't want to say grubby little hands, but I think right now everyone's a bit paranoid about having grubby little hands. If we can just ship devices straight out to users if they need a new device. And that's the kind of thing that, all of a sudden we need to start rethinking some of those things, where orgs that were going, but it doesn't have these one or two things that, I've absolutely required in the past. You have to start, putting in place questions around, are they things that we still require, or are there alternates to those? Are there other protections that sort of fill in some of the gaps of some of the differences in these different methods? So I think we'll see, some of that, like orgs that had sort of delayed decisions. around, you know, adopting certain technologies until, like, even if we take a look at organizations that may have been waiting until the October timeframe to get rid of old versions of Office, I think some of them have sort of had a very, you know, rapid change in terms of thinking that we need to get rid of some of that stuff before, you know, way before then.
Well, I think, again, it's going to be interesting. I mean, nobody knows the answer to these questions. It's something that we probably all need to keep in mind and understand and realize that, yeah, it's going to change in many, many ways. And to an extent, it's very pleasing to see that basically the system has coped pretty well, considering what's happened and how it's worked, and again, what would we have done if there wasn't sort of the internet available and all that sort of stuff. So again, you know, interesting times, and I'm sure we'll continue to discuss it, and we'll get people like yourself to come on and give us some more thoughts as we work out what this new normal is. But I think in summary, it's probably an idea to have a look at the Microsoft 365 Business Premium, if you aren't, to get all those security features. We get the Azure AD P1. Look at Defender. Cannot say that any more strongly. Please, go and have a look at it and evaluate it. It's really a powerful product. Cloud App Security is another one. Sentinel is another one. So the tools are out there. Go and have a play. You get a lot of these in partner tenants if you are a partner. So again, start using these, understanding these, because these are, again, location independent technologies that can be deployed and managed across your environment. All right, so I think that probably rounds us up in this podcast. Mark, do you want to let people know how they can get in contact with you and follow what you're doing and the technical expertise you're sharing out there?
Yeah, so probably main is out on my blog site, intunedin.net, and I'm sure you'll put the link in for that, as well as, you know, reach out to me on Twitter. It's probably social where I'm most active.
Excellent. All right, well, we'll make sure that all that information is available for Mark. And again, he does write a fantastic blog. He got some articles up there recently. I think you put some up about the Azure conditional access and Azure AD. So again, key technology. So I'll make sure that you do avail yourself of Mark's resources and get in contact with him, follow him on the socials. Plenty of good information there. I'll take this opportunity to thank Mark for his time and sharing all that information. And this has been another episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.